I'm starting nine dickers. All right. Sounds like we need to make a side bet.
Starts with a C, ends with an O, and in the middle is a cat.
Ditka's hair follicles cure malaria.
All right, gentlemen, the answer was the bear.
Coach Ditka's hair could single-handedly cure our dependence on foreign oil.
Bears, 31 to negative 7. The bear. He's a merciful Ditka.
The bear.
This is a family show, my friend. No cursing.
Yeah, that kind of language it belongs in the gutter, the speakeasy, and Coach Ditka's press conference. You know.
Score!
Welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your host, Sean. We've got a really action-packed episode for you today. We're going to be talking with our Bulls and White Sox insider, Gary. And the big news is Blackhawks are back in the conference finals and 8 more wins before they get to another Stanley Cup. So let's start off with the Blackhawks and talk a little bit about what they've been doing so far. We had the first series that we went over in depth with the St. Louis Blues, and that was a really tough series, really defensive-minded team, good goaltending, and it was more the same with the Minnesota Wild. It was almost like a deja vu from the first round, is because Minnesota is just such a tough defensive team. They reminded me a lot of the Predators team from a couple years ago, where the Blackhawks had such a hard time beating them because of just the you know, clogging up the middle and making them play a lot of dump and chase, and that's what the Minnesota Wild did to the Blackhawks. And it's just a little bit frustrating, is they know they can't skate with Chicago. They know they don't have the offensive firepower, so they've really got to slow the game down and make it really tough defensively for them to be able to do anything. So that's really what Minnesota did, and it proved effective. I mean, even though the Hawks won in 6 games, it was really a tough series, and the wins that the Blackhawks had, they really had to work for. You're really looking at that's going to be the formula to beat the Blackhawks, is forcing them to do a lot of dump and chase and play on their heels on the defensive end. But it was nice to finally see Steiger play better. He's had a rough since the Blackhawks brought him back. He hasn't looked like the same Versteeg that they had when the first cup run, but he finally came out of his shell and is looking a lot better. And that's really important going forward, because, Kane and Taves can't just carry the whole load, and Sharp hasn't looked great, and Hossa's looked really good, but you know, he's not getting the goals, but he's playing really tough. I'm going to break down the fourth wall here of podcasting. As I'm sitting right now during intermission of the Blackhawks game recording this, so I actually know what's going on. But and we recorded another segment with Gary last night and Saturday night. So this isn't all recorded in continuous real time. Is unfortunately everybody's got lives and schedules, and so we have to do this as we do it and piecemeal it a little bit together. So. That's how we have to do it. But looking forward to the conference finals versus the LA Kings, the rematch. The St. Louis Blues posed a really tough matchup defensively, and the Wild was even more so. The Kings are even more so than that. The only saving grace is that they've had some injuries on with their defensemen. But Mike Quick is such a good goalie that he could really change the way this game is played if he's on his game. And so that's going to be something that the Blackhawks really have to take advantage of. If he's giving up goals, is just to take advantage, because I don't think he's going to be giving up juicy rebounds or anything like that throughout the series. And they're going to have to take advantage of the fact that they're struggling a little bit with their defensemen and their health, because that's – this team is such a defensive-minded team that it's going to be more of the same of trying to stop the Blackhawks. And the Blackhawks are just going to have to get used to this style of play. Is dump and chase, dump and chase. But the one nice thing is it isn't going to be as nearly as physical as it was with the St. Louis series. And I don't think it will be as physical as the Minnesota series, because Stoner is just, for a guy that was, you know, not a highly rated defenseman or, you know, one of the top pairs, he was just really laying the law down and being really physical that the Blackhawks had a hard time matching up against. Whereas the Blackhawks answered the call when the Blues were playing really physical. So I don't think the Kings are going to be as physical, but they're just a really good defensive-minded team. Sutter really has this team playing well defensively, and you know, they've even historically the last several years, they've just been a really solid team, and it's been the Blackhawks and injuries that have prevented them from you know, possibly winning another Stanley Cup. So look for a lot of the similar style play, except probably less physical with this series, is a lot of dump and chase, a lot of clogging in the middle, and hopefully the Blackhawks get quick changes, because that's going to be where the Kings have kind of an anemic offense. And if the Blackhawks play really smart, and the let me just take a step back here, is I think that if the Blackhawks play too conservatively, they're going to have difficulty scoring just because of how defensive-minded the Kings are. So the Blackhawks are really going to have to be a little bit aggressive to start scoring goals. When they get a little aggressive is when the Kings are going to be able to take advantage. They don't have a very good offense, but they will take advantage of sloppy play, poor line changes, and mistakes like that. They're going to capitalize on those. And the Blackhawks are going to have mistakes because they're being aggressive on the offensive end. So that's going to be a key for the Blackhawks, is keeping their heads in the game, is making their line changes quick, even in the second period or in overtime when they're long changes. Is you got to be heads up on there, not give up any fast breaks like they did at, you know, a couple of the other series, and really keep their head in the game and not had any lapse, you know, mental lapses in their passes, especially across the front of the goal. And that's going to be the key to this series. And I think the Blackhawks have plenty enough skill to win this series and win it decisively. I mean, not to say they're going to blow them out of the water, kind of like the Rangers 7-2 victory over Montreal. It's going to be tightly contested, but I think they have plenty of firepower to be able to you know, win this in 5 or 6 games. But they're just going to have to be with it mentally. I'm really excited, and we're going to have more to talk about, because there's going to be some more days in between these games. So I believe we'll be doing this podcast right around Game 3 when they go back to LA. So Hawks with home ice advantage in this round. And actually, as long as they're in the playoffs, they have home ice advantage because they had a better record than every other team that's still left. Hopefully, Hawks can go to LA with a 2-0 lead like they did when they went to Minnesota. And a couple of things to note and keep in mind to watch for is the Blackhawks had a couple days off, and in one hand is really nice to get the rest and kind of heal up on bruises and bumps from a pretty physical series where Stoner was really laying the law down on the Hawks. You know, you develop a little bit of rust when you're not playing for a couple days, whereas the Kings just came off of a Game 7 win where they were sharp. So they're coming, you know, off of playing a hard physical do or die game. But on the other hand is the Blackhawks have been traveling out of state for games, whereas the Kings haven't played out of California in over a month. So they're going to be traveling to Chicago, which is, you know, a couple hour time difference. And there's a huge difference in, you know, just traveling out of state. So that's another thing to look for. So moving gears a little bit to the Chicago Bears is all their draft picks are signed. And, you know, one hand, there was the Bears have always been really good since Cliff Stein has been with the Bears organization, of being able to sign their draft picks and getting those deals done early. And they've always been either the first team to get them all done or right among the leaders and getting it done really fast and signing all the rookies. which is good because it's when rookies are holding out for contract purposes, it's not like a veteran holding out. They really miss a lot because the rookie mini camps and training camp for these young kids is huge because that's really setting the stage for their first appearance within the professional game. And if you don't have the momentum going in and have the playbook under starting to learn it and being able to develop your understanding of the game and stepping in, that's a real big hindrance because this is the time when the learning curve is the steepest. You're a veteran and you hold out, you've been around the block a couple times and it's old hat to step in. Even if it's a new team, a new system, you've been around the block. It's a lot easier to learn. The learning curve is less steep. But when the learning curve is the steepest and you're already setting yourself back by holding, not signing your rookie contract, that's bad. So the Bears have always been really good with getting that done. And with this new collective bargaining agreement and the slotting system for the rookies, it's made it even more easy as the Bears just boom, 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 knocked everybody down and got everybody signed. So that's really good. Over the weekend, they had their first rookie mini camp, and we'll see come Monday more information about that and how people looked. And the only thing we're really hearing out of it so far is Jordan Lynch is a guy that Mark Trestman really likes. He's a guy that they're going to really give a chance to playing running back. And he's got an uphill battle with him on his hands because they drafted, they had a backup running back in Ford, and Forte is really good. And then they drafted running back in the fourth round in Carey, so he's looking at the number four running back spot. So did they give him the opportunity, if Carey looks good, to cutting Ford and having Forte, Carey, and then having Jordan Lynch serve as number three running back, number three quarterback, which is an interesting thought. So think about this is you with one roster spot is you have your backup quarterback, backup running back, and you can do a lot of cool things in really interesting offenses with wildcat and option plays and really thinking outside the box by having a guy like this if he's able to throw and be a running back in the NFL game. So we got a lot of things we need to see. That's something to really look forward to, and we'll get more information in the coming days of what's going to happen with that. And another Bears story that should be an absolute non-story is, and I'm going to break this down for you because it's a little bit of a pet peeve, but it's also kind of what the fun of sports radio is. These top lists and ranking players, and these are all tricks that sports radio and sports websites and sports magazines do to sell something to their audience, and B, give themselves something to talk about in slow situations, slow news times. Recently there was a top 100 NFL players list, and Matt Forte was, I believe, 91. It's not a news story. These things happen all the time. Where it becomes a news story is Matt Forte responded to it and was really upset and felt disrespected by the fact that he was only 90 something. And it's silly for him to respond because these are just stupid things to generate people talking and generate buzz and give sportscasters something to talk about. Matt Forte responds, and that's, you get this situation where, then it becomes a news story. And if you look at the way this was generated, it wasn't like they asked NFL players, who are your top 100 players? Because odds are, they're going to have a difficult time thinking of 100, and they're just going to start naming guys after maybe 25. And they'll be like, 45, 26, Tim Tebow. They're going to run out of guys to name, or they're just going to start naming their teammates and friends. What they did is, I believe they asked them to do their top 10 or 20, and then it was an aggregate of who got the most votes. So, some people put Matt Forte in there, which is a really big honor, listing him in the top, X number of players. Then it just became an aggregate. Are you realistically, Matt Forte is a really good running back, but the state of the NFL is that NFL running backs aren't as highly regarded as they had been in previous years. You have a situation where are you going to put him compared to Peyton Manning? Tom Brady. Like, you know, these just, you know, guys are going to be in the Football Hall of Fame. Is you don't compare Matt Forte to that. He's a really good running back, and he's, you know, he's been perfect for what the Bears are trying to do. But the thing is that he's not, you know, he's not Peyton Manning, he's not Tom Brady, and he's not a game changer like that. So it's just a little bit silly, and it's just been a fodder and a fire here in Chicago about, you know, disrespected Matt Forte. And is the only real good that can come out of this is the fact that maybe it fires up Matt Forte, and you get a guy that's really trying to prove himself in the coming season. And then that's hopefully something that, you know, can come out of this. But other than that, it's just, you know, fodder that a guy responded to that he shouldn't have responded to. Other than that, there's not much Bears talk going on. And the only other thing that I really wanted to touch on was after the first two series is just the way Patrick Kane has stepped up. Is there a better captain in the NHL than John Toews? And I mean, let's look at him. Is, you know, Ryan Getzlaf from the Ducks, but John Toews is what he's been to this team. Is, you know, he's been the spark when they needed a spark. He stepped in and played whatever role they need him to play. He just doesn't play as what John Toews' style is. Is he steps in whatever you need. You need a guy to front of the goal presence. That's what he does. If you need a guy that's going to play tough defense, that's what he's going to do. Penalty killing, that's what he's going to do. Power play, that's what he's going to do. Gunning down there and throwing himself, you know, into the play to try to score at the end of the game, that's what he's going to do. He's going to do whatever it takes. You know, Ryan Getzlaf, nice player, but is he John Toews? No, he's not. Zdeno Chara from Boston, different breed, and he hasn't been the Zdeno Chara that he was several years ago. He's getting over, a little older. Defenseman, harder to match up with a guy like, you know, that's a real scoring threat like John Toews. Buffalo Sabres don't have a captain right now. The Calgary Flames, ugh, you know, Mark Giordano. Eric Staal from the Hurricanes. Landeskog from Avalanche, no. Blue Jackets they have a vacant captaincy. Dallas Stars with Jamie Benn, no. Henrik Zetterberg of Detroit. I mean, Henrik Zetterberg is a really good player, but Pavel Datsyuk's their best player, so he's not even the best player on their team, you know, so he's not going to be the best captain out there. Jovanovski of Florida. Dustin Brown of the Kings. I don't see him as that, even though he's a good player. Mikko Koivu, maybe Shea Weber from Nashville. He's, you know, he's a phenomenal captain. You know, good leader. He's a good productive player. Jonathan Tavares from the Islanders. He could be someday be, you know, one of the best captains. And talked about this, the fact that, you know, he's still young, and then the Islanders haven't done anything. Claude Giroux of the Flyers, you know, he's been a good leader for that team, but that's still a team that hasn't done anything since 2010. You know, consider that one of the best captains. You know, Shane Doan, I mean, you get down to either Steven Stamkos or Andrew Ladd is the captain for the Jets, and he's a guy that you know, the Blackhawks didn't re-sign. And so, I mean, you're looking at either Steven Stamkos or Sid Crosby as captains that could be considered as good as Jonathan Toews. Then you have to look at what his teams accomplish under his captaincy. And, you know, nobody that has been able to do what the Blackhawks have been doing is under their current captain. Honestly, I wouldn't say he's the best player in the league, but Jonathan Toews is the best captain in the NHL right now. And I'm really holding strong for that. And if you guys think otherwise, you know, definitely present your arguments to me. You know, go to the website and sound off about it, because I would actually love to hear what you have to say and be able to discuss it a bit. Jason, our Blackhawks guy, was supposed to come in but this weekend, but, you know, as I keep saying, is real life gets in the way sometimes, and he had some things come up that, you know, he was obligated to do. So next week, maybe we can discuss this a little more with him, hash this out a little more, and hopefully we have some input from the listeners. Because I know you're out there. I can see the numbers of who's actually listening to this podcast, so, which is pretty impressive. And with that, we're gonna go to sit down with our friend Gary and talk some more about the baseball and basketball. So welcome to the show, Gary. You haven't been here in an episode or two, so welcome back.
Thanks. I get to talk into this nice fancy microphone.
Fancy schmancy. That's what we do here. So where do you want to start? Bulls, Cubs, Sox?
Doesn't matter. I, We could start Bulls, if you'd like.
Sure. We missed a couple weeks ago was the 25th anniversary of the Michael Jordan shot over Craig Elo.
You saw my Facebook post, didn't you?
I did. So, yeah, 25th anniversary. I'm not sure if that makes me feel a little bit excited because that was such an awesome shot and a big turning point for the Bulls franchise, or if it just makes me feel old because I remember it.
We both had hair then. So.
And we did both have hair.
Nah, I mean, yeah, time's flying. Yeah, well, it sucks that it's 25. I mean, I heard Pippen is what, 48 now? So Jordan's 50. Yeah.
I know. I remember these guys being, you know, young, fresh faces.
In their
20s. I was a kid too. But, I mean, that was really a turning point for the Bulls franchise, if you think about it. I mean, it was a big game there. I mean, it was a game five of send them past the Cleveland. And Cleveland at that time was – people were kind of talking about them being the team that would dethrone Detroit.
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably more of a turning point in Cleveland because the Bulls were still on the uprise then, and it seemed like Cleveland was there. They had one of the best records in the East, and then after that, you just never heard from them. Brad Daugherty started getting knee injuries, and you know, that was it.
Craig Elo.
You know, he was a good defender. You know, he just couldn't stay up in air for more than 25 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch the shot, I mean, Craig Elo could not have done anything more to stop that shot. That was just like, you know, the heavens opening up and saying, this shot's going in no matter what you do, Craig Elo.
Yeah, and I think what made it more interesting was the shot before when Elo had that wide open layup with 6 seconds. Basically, Cleveland had the ball with 6 seconds left. Bulls were up by one, and Cleveland inbounds to a wide open Elo for a layup, and they took the lead with 3 seconds left. So people forget about that play because Jordan, but yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of when I heard it was the 25th anniversary of that shot, I simultaneously smiled and cried a little bit. It's like, man, am I old.
Yeah, I mean, at least for me, that was when I started getting into basketball, really. Like, 10-year-old kid, or 11-year-old kid, just watching that kind of got me hooked. And then, you know, then the next couple years, they were already there. They were just a step away from beating Detroit, and then they finally do. And, yeah, it's easy to be a Bulls fan when they win championships, just like it's easy to be a Blackhawks fan right now.
It's true.
So,
and you just hope as somebody that supports the franchise and as ownership that the fans ride that wave even when they dip down. That,
you know. Well, I mean, they did for the Bulls, right? They were still had one of the top ticket sales even when Tim Floyd was a coach, which isn't a good thing. But
wow, I forgot about Tim Floyd.
Yeah.
Was a guy that they plucked out of nowhere.
He was a coach for a time.
He was a guy that they call a coach.
I mean, those were the years where enabled me to get on a season ticket list, so I can't complain too much.
It's true. I mean, so, you know, I'm on the Bears season ticket wait list, and part of me wants them to have a couple of tank years so I can,
get on there.
But
though.
I've in like 8 years of being on the season ticket list, I've creeped up like 3 spots.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just football is like the sport, so there's such a demand. Good luck with that one.
So staying on the Bulls, I guess we are on Carmelo watch.
We can kind of take. I kind of want to talk about tips first before Carmelo.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean,
because now that all that's quieting down.
I mean, the one nice thing is, I mean, so basically we have a coach who's done a lot with little. And so teams – and he's a little bit unhappy with the brass in the organization for – trading away one of his favorite players. So the newspaper says. I mean, that's all you can go by. You don't know what really goes on behind closed doors. But you know, there's teams that are per sources courting him and want to speak.
Yeah, and then they go and sign Steve Kerr. And
which how did Steve Kerr, a guy with zero coaching background, become a hot commodity? I mean, I
the Knicks, Phil Jackson. As soon as you started hearing Steve Kerr rumors to the Knicks, all of a sudden he's like the next big coach. And, you know, hopefully, like, a lot of people, when the news came out that the Lakers were interested in interviewing Thibodeau, and then all of a sudden Golden State was, hopefully a lot of people just kind of look past all that once you see Golden State signing Steve Kerr. Were they really interested in talking to Tibbs, or
I don't know,
some writer?
It's funny because the Golden State job seems like a pretty sweet one right now as far as vacancies, and they seemed like they were just throwing a contract at anybody that wanted to take it.
Yeah, I mean, but the Bulls aren't going to just pull up Celtics and let Tibbs go. Like,
oh, no. I mean, the thing is
maybe for a lottery pick, but who's in the right mind going to give a lottery pick for a coach?
I mean, the Lakers are – no, I'm saying is if the Lakers did that, I would be very shocked. But then you'd be like, well, you know, they've done some dumb things and –
Yeah, that so you know, it's important to have a good coach, no doubt, but there are a lot of good coaches out there. Very rarely does a team that's consistently good like the Lakers have a lottery pick. So to give that up, I mean, that's idiotic. Like, if I'm the Bulls, you have to think about that, because, you know, last time the Bulls had a lottery pick with what Derrick Rose.
Yeah. It turned out okay for
players. I mean, you look at their lottery picks in the past, you know, for the most part, you know, besides Tyrus Thomas, and then if you go, you have to go back to, you know, 2000 with Curry and Tyson, even Chandler turned out to be pretty good. But, I mean, lottery picks turn out to be very good basketball players usually.
They can.
I mean, It's a huge – you're giving up a guy that's going to be a major part of your franchise for the next 10 years for a coach that might be part of your franchise for three.
But to be fair, if you were to give up a lottery pick in the NBA for a coach, this might be the year to do it.
Because of deep draft? I mean,
it's a little bit deep but not top-heavy.
I still don't think you do it.
No, I'm not saying you do. I'm saying if you were to, this would be the year to do it. I mean, you don't do it when there's a LeBron year.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot worse draft years that you could have done it since this. I'm trying to think of one that comes to mind. I don't know. There's had to be one in the last 10 years where you just, like, even last year's with Bennett and being the number one pick and then – you know, who's really the guy from Philadelphia was the rookie of the year, but even he's not – he's a good player. You don't perceive him to be a great player. So, I don't know. I just – you don't do it. Like, I think it's just a stupid idea. But, you know, if the talk is there, you know, it's going to make news, and that's all that was, and hopefully it's done with it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's you get a little tired of hearing all of the, I guess, the chatter where Tibbs is fighting with Pax and Gar, and you get a little tired of it because
you saw how much of that was an issue when Tibbs got an extension, right?
Yeah,
it's like it is. You heard about that. You've been hearing about the fighting for a couple of years now, and he still got an extension, and he still took it. And
it's a business. You know, you're not always going to get along with everybody you work with, but you got to work with them. And hopefully, you know, if the Bulls decide to at least let him talk to the Lakers and nothing becomes of it and he stays with Chicago, that you maybe some of that infighting talk dies down because he decided to stay.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I just don't think it's even going to get to that point. I don't think he's even going to – I just don't think – I think it's a lot of – Like, I don't think the Lakers are going to say, we want to talk to him. And I don't think he's going to be like, yeah, you want to talk to them. I just don't think it's going to get that far.
No, I don't think so either. So. I mean, because it's – I mean, the talk was really hot for, what, 4 days? And
yeah. It's sort of – it's funny. It was hot, and then you hear Golden State getting involved, and you're like, oh, well, there's multiple teams. And all of a sudden, it's just Golden State's gone. And then, like, the seems like the Laker talk for coaches has kind of turned a page, too. They're not – I mean – it's just a story. People talk about it.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So, with the Carmelo watch, how do you think, now that Phil Jackson is now with the Knicks organization and the guy he courted to be his coach decided to take the Golden State job, which rightfully so, with the owner.
More money, closer to home, better team.
Yeah, better team, more money, closer to home, and you don't have the owner of the Knicks and with his grumpy little hands in there. Because you know that guy, he said, I'm backing off and leaving Phil Jackson in charge. And that lasted like 38 minutes. And then he was just like, grubby hands.
It sort of helps the Bulls, but I think it helps Houston more. I think it helps the Bulls in that there's lots of a chance that Melo's going to stay. If he stays, it's just for the money. He doesn't care about winning a championship.
Well, from what I'm reading, I don't know how much it's true because it's coming from inside sources, unnamed sources, but Phil Jackson supposedly said
that, New York.
That he's expecting a hometown discount because he wants to. I mean, I'm sure it's not.
The New York news is the most false news there could possibly
it's be. True.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're the ones who started the whole tips stuff a long time ago and just to try to get rumors that Tibbs would be a Knick head coach. But, I mean, not having Steve Kerr go to the Knicks, what that does is it basically says the guy that that Phil Jackson wants says no, he would rather stay close to home. And what does that say about the team's immediate future, which is what Melo should be worrying about because he is 30. And if you look at Kobe Bryant as a perfect example of how quickly you descend when you get into your 30s, you know.
Kobe just boom.
Say it's because of injuries, say it's because of old age. It doesn't really matter. The matters is you can't expect Kobe to be the Kobe of old.
But yeah, I mean, the fact remains is it doesn't matter how good you are. Time catches up.
Father time, yeah.
Look at Tiger Woods. He went from being the what everyone said was going to be the greatest golfer of all time, and he was going to smash Jack Nicklaus's record of number of majors, and suddenly the guy hasn't won one in years.
Yeah.
And he's not even going to play the rest of the year because of injuries.
So yeah. It's true. And you actually see it more in football than anything else. I mean, like Urlacher is a perfect example of just like how quickly someone goes downhill and like just can't even get a job. But
well, I mean, you know, with football, it's before people would let you play until you just physically couldn't play anymore. But with the era of salary cap, you can't do that. You get a guy who has a serious injury and he is a player that's put up, you know, he's played at a high level. So he's being compensated for past performance. And suddenly you look at him and you're like, you're not that player anymore to be worth X amount of dollars. You're worth 10% of that. And ego becomes a thing saying, well, I deserve much more than that. I'm going to go somewhere else. And with Urlacher's case is he thought he was worth more than the $1 or $2 million they were offering him. And they only really offered him that because
he was Urlacher.
Yeah. If you know, other than that, they would not have offered him anything.
So with Melo, back to that, I mean, you think he's got to be looking at – like he's got like a 4-year window where he can win a championship. And, you know, you look at the two teams interested in him. It's the Bulls and the Rockets. And, I mean, the Rockets kind of scare me in that, you know, I could see them pulling strings, trading Omer, getting rid of Jeremy Lin, getting some salary cap space to have, you know, a pretty amazing big three.
What's kind of funny is that – when you look at some of the contracts that Houston's given out, you're like, how are they not in salary cap hell? But they just somehow figure out a way.
Well, Dwight took a huge pay cut. They don't really have – they don't really pay anyone else besides, you know, those four people I just mentioned. And you know, they get rid of two of them. Those are huge. Those are $15 million contracts each next year.
Yeah, but you got the thing is, Omer Sheikh, I think you potentially could move him because does he have 1 year left on the deal?
They both. Aim and Lynn both have 1 year.
Lynn's only got 1 year left, too? Okay. I guess expiring contracts you can do things with.
So, I mean, you know, that to me is – if I were Melo, I'd think about that because, like, that's a – to pair him up with Harden and Dwight Howard.
And the sad fact remains is that it is a business and – it's tax benefit.
Oh, yeah, the Texas tax benefit, just like the Florida,
as opposed to...
Horrible.
I mean, that's why a lot of guys don't want to play in Canada, just because of the increased taxes. Same thing with Illinois.
I mean, the other side you can look at is if Melo becomes a Bull, all of a sudden his jersey is number one selling jersey in the country, and, you know, he'll get all the endorsements he could ever... Not that he doesn't already, but, you know, there's... I mean, look what Derrick Rose did, and just having 3 years of service signs some... ridiculous endorsement contracts.
Yeah,
there's a lot more opportunity for that in Chicago than there is in Houston.
True, and you hope that Carmelo's wife, you know, wants to be in Chicago over Houston.
I think she would, but
you'd think so.
I don't think it really matters.
Anytime I hear her name, all I can think of is from Chappelle's Show. He's like, "Hurro, rah rah,
yeah,
roll, rah rah."
I don't think it matters. I think she'll live wherever she wants. She doesn't have to worry about money.
No, not doesn't have to worry about money, but she wants to worry about her lifestyle, which is, you know, she couldn't really do in Denver. Hopefully, she can't do it in Houston. I've never been to Houston.
I've been to Houston. It's pretty. Not much going on.
That's good.
A lot of people, nothing to do.
That's good. Yeah. Hopefully, then, rah rah, if you are listening to this, Chicago.
Yeah.
It's funny. I was not on the Carmelo train for a long time, and then.
My change of attitude brought you on?
No, it just happened to be about the same time as I watched them in their anemic offense, and you're just like, they could play the best defense in the world, but somebody has to shoot the basketball.
Someone over 6'5", you know, even if Derrick Rose is healthy, like we saw that too. Once they, you know, you get LeBron on Derrick Rose, what do you do? So I'm interested about the draft, though. Like everything's pointing to them going to go after someone who can shoot from the outside, even though Tony Snell was supposed to be that person. But not that I don't like the Tony Snell draft. Looking back, I think I would have liked Tim Hardaway Jr. much better. But.
Yeah, but I mean, when you draft late, it's...
Well, they got a couple decent, like 16 and 19, so they should be able to draft someone who can be impactful, hopefully. At least one of those two.
The nice thing is with two mid-round draft picks, you can sort of take a chance on one.
Yeah.
Because you...
Do you wish it was like football, where if you have two first-round picks in the teens, you could somehow trade down?
Yeah. I'm much more familiar with football. My knowledge is much better in football. So I always run by you. I was like, can they parlay these two into... And you're like, nope. I'm like, but... And you're like, nope, not going to happen. I'm like, Gary, what if you... And you're like, nuh-uh.
Yeah, it sucks.
What if we package Taj with it and we move up?
I'd love them to trade Taj. If they trade Taj, as much as you know, everyone here loves Taj, if they trade him, that means they're going all for Carmelo, and I'm for that.
This is my feeling about Taj. I like Taj a lot. I think Taj is a good guy. I think he's a real blue-collar Chicago type player. Good player. But the thing is...
Not a star.
He's not a star. You won't win a championship.
With him as a star. Yeah.
And the problem with the Bulls and Bulls fans, and just Chicago sports in general, is...
Being enamored by people.
We fall in love with our blue-collar guys. And...
Well, I mean, Noah kind of... Noah went beyond expectations, right? We fell in love with him, but then all of a sudden he was awesome.
To be fair, is before this year, I mean... In the past couple of years, how many times have you heard people complain about the contract that Noah had?
This contract's great. I never complained about it.
I've heard a lot of complaints
about it. Those people don't get it. You get Roy Hibbert's contract, and you're like, holy crap, look at Noah's.
Well, I mean, now you're like, oh, great. But, you know, you have this guy who's not scoring. And he's a hardworking guy, a hustle guy, and you're paying him a lot of money. And now he came out of his shell.
Yeah, when they signed him, I still didn't think it was – I thought it was a good contract considering what other – think of what Tyrus Thomas got. I mean, I say more. But no, but in that, really, like if you have a big guy that plays 30 minutes a game that is a starter for a basketball team, they're going to get anywhere between $8 and $12 million a year. So like for him getting $10 million a year, I never thought that was a lot. Now I thought it was a decent deal. Now I look at it, looking back at how he's, you know, what he's turned out to be, it's a fantastic deal. And he could get a lot more. He could get a max contract. And when his contract was up and everyone was talking about how Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, because Derrick Rose was going to need a max contract. Joakim Noah did not take a max contract, and he didn't do it because he wanted money to be available for Derrick Rose to take a max contract. So looking back, it, you know, turned out to benefit the Bulls tremendously. So.
And the thing is somewhat of a sacrifice to do this, but the thing about it is you're still making a ton.
He doesn't care. Noah's also a different breed of basketball player. Like he grew up rich. He even admits it. He grew up really well off at, you know, France and New York, and he, you know, if you heard him talk about his coach that passed away from New York this year, how he helped him learn how to play street basketball. You know, because he always, the way he grew up, he never was exposed to that side of things, and that's what made him be a hard worker and a blue collar worker. You know, he didn't grow up like a normal basketball player. You know, he grew up very well off. So, I mean, he's probably got a different perspective on money.
Yeah, but you know, it's. These guys, even when they don't take the max contract, they're still making a fantastic, you know, living.
Why? You don't think Dwight Howard's struggling?
Well, he's got it. What was it, Latrell Sprewell? He's like my family's got to eat. Latrell Sprewell, choke Coach McGee.
Oh, that Mike Dunleavy. Oh man, he took less money to come to the Bulls. I feel bad for him.
How is his family gonna eat?
I know. But. So, I mean, so going back to Taj, like, he's at his peak right now, I think. I think you see the best he's going to be, and he's at his highest trade value. And if you can let go some of that money in order to get a Carmelo Anthony, then you do it. And everyone's talking about Boozer being amnestied or traded, and what I think could happen is I think Boozer and possibly Taj do, but I think Boozer and Jimmy Butler – more likely could be traded to New York for a sign and trade with Melo. And the reason why I say Jimmy Butler is his contract's up next year too, so he's gonna want more money.
And he's gonna be a tricky one. Is how do you evaluate him? Because I mean, when you look at it,
basically what it comes down to is he should have been his offensive game should have increased dramatically this year, and it didn't. So that's what makes it harder.
Yeah, it should have dramatically just because of more, you know, without Derrick Rose there, he should have flourished because of opportunity.
Yep.
And with more time in the league and another offseason, you know, he should have, and it didn't. I mean, he's a fantastic defensive player.
Yeah, and it sucks. He's
a hustle guy.
Because I like him a lot. I just don't know if the Bulls should be paying him $8 million a year.
No. I mean, we learned from the Luol Deng thing is you can replace a guy like that. And I like –
they could probably get Luol for $8 million.
I mean, I really like Luol Deng, but, you know, the thing is if you can replace guys like that.
Yeah, and it sucks. But goes back to what you were saying before with, like, fans becoming infatuated with players. But at the same time, it's like you have a chance to get Melo and – New York's like, okay, we'll do a sign and trade. We'll take Boozer's contract, but we want Jimmy Butler. Do it. Like, don't even think about blinking about, you know, it sucks. I mean, that's why you got Tony Snell, right? He's supposed to be that guy. You can always fill in Mike Dunleavy again. He filled in nicely this year. And maybe you draft a shooting guard as well. So,
yeah, so we see where it go from there. I mean,
yeah, we'll find out, you know, month and a half. See what happens.
So I guess we'll go on to White Sox. Is big story is Abreu's bat and Abreu's ankle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. We were talking earlier. The White Sox have been hit with a lot of injuries. Kind of sucks. And actually, it's funny. Losing Adam Eaton has hurt them a lot. They went from a couple games above 500 to they're now a couple games below. Not having that leadoff hitter and just having to, you know, having Diaz in center is always a bad idea. He's also horrible on the base path as he got picked up on a tag up today at second, and I didn't see it, but I was driving, and oh, for the announcers, this White Sox radio announcers who are extremely White Sox announcers are biased, you know, very White Sox heavy. They're like, that was a bonehead play, and like we should start something new, bonehead play of the game, and today's is 100 Diaz, and it's like, well, Diaz had 100 of those last year, and so getting Eaton back will be really nice.
He's got another rehab game tomorrow.
And then he'll be up, him and Sale. I don't know how Sale did today, but his first rehab start was pretty sensational. And, you know, Beckham starting to hit. So, like,
the thing that's scary with Sale is just the complete – I mean, the complete – rash of Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
And now I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but
probably will.
But look at how many we're only like 40 games into the season, and there's already been what 25 Tommy John surgeries.
So the bottom line is, a Tommy John surgery probably will happen to Chris Sale. It's only a matter of time. I think the White Sox gave that contract to Chris Sale expecting something like that to happen, expecting him to miss a year. And I think he believed it too. Otherwise, why would he sign the contract he signed with the White Sox if he didn't think that? It's very team friendly contract. It's one of those things we talked before. This is a rebuilding year, and you know, you texted me about Jeff Kepinger. You know what my thoughts were on that. It's like the White Sox are treating this year as a rebuilding year, and thus being, they designate him for assignment. Like, why would they keep this 34-year-old guy who is coming off of an injury that where he couldn't throw anymore, and we just cut your losses and move towards the future? So with that being said, this rash of injuries, including a Abreu's ankle, you know, it's all, you know, no, it's not the end of the world, I guess. We as Sox fans don't have to jump off the ledge. The only thing that sucks about it is if Abreu misses an extended period of time, you know, it sucks what, you know, kind of what looks like is happening, what could be for his rookie season and have a really special season. Like, you don't want that to, you know, like, you want to see that. That's fun for baseball, you know?
I mean, the Abreu ankle is one of the first big criticisms, I guess, I could have of Robin Ventura is...
Keep throwing him out there.
Is they keep... throwing him out there because he's got the hot bat.
Still hitting with it.
Yeah, you know, but at some point is it's better to rest the guy a couple games.
Yeah, especially if you're not going to win. Like,
yeah, it's better to rest him and then have him come back and have the ankle, you know, be better than to have an injury and then come back and then have to work through the rehab while you're trying to hit, which leads to all kinds of problems in itself.
Everything I'm reading is he's like – pushing to play, but I mean, with someone like him and what he's doing, you gotta have the approach like they did with Chris Sale, right? They just put Chris Sale had arm problems. They put him on the DL.
Well, I think that's in today's modern sports is you have to have the medical side, you know, say as management, you have to take medical side and go, what are you saying? And then have the you know, the cojones to go, nope, we're putting our foot down.
The other thing is, like, he just hits home runs, so does he really need to, like, run on his ankle anyways? Does it really matter? He's got 15 already.
Yeah, he's on pace to have a lot, 15 in, like, 44 games.
Yeah, he's on pace to have, like, 60 or something.
I mean, he's not going to, but...
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's been a really nice thing, and, you know, I don't buy many player jerseys, but... I think the last one I bought was Maglio Ordóñez.
And I remember when you bought the Mag jersey.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards getting a Brett. I think he's going to be that guy that's going to be a nice hitter on the White Sox for a very long time. And, you know, great signing by Rick Hahn. Rick Hahn is so nice to have. And even though Kenny Williams is still in the picture, it's so nice to have a GM that just does the right thing all the time.
I mean, the one nice thing you could say about Kenny was that he was aggressive, and it wasn't always in the best way, but he was at least aggressive.
I mean, it's kind of funny. People are like, oh, the White Sox traded prospects, but none of those guys ever became good except Gio Gonzalez. So it's like, in which he traded twice.
But I mean, when Rick Hahn got promoted up, I think you probably remember me saying that I would have actually loved to see him come to the Cubs.
A lot of White Sox fans wanted him to be the GM for a very long time. They knew that he's been great. Like, even when he's been bad, it's been acceptable. Like, he helped the whole Jeff Kepinger signing, and he was like, that was my mistake, and I'm not messing around, and I'm moving forward. It's funny. It's very non-Jerry Reinsdorf, like, when you think about it.
Oh, absolutely. But it's refreshing to hear general managers do something like that, where they say, I made a mistake, I'm going to own up to it and move on from it, because too many times the pride gets in the way and they want to, you know, somehow keep pushing that mistake until it becomes a success, but that rarely happens.
You need your boy Jed Hoyer to say he made a mistake in a few signings, or let go, if players let him go too.
I mean, can't really let go of Edwin Jackson.
It's a mistake. I mean, I thought it was a good signing at the time.
Oh, I did too, but he had a good game today. But that's about
it. He was good for the White Sox.
You know, so that's one of those ones that, you know, it is a bad signing, but the thing is what else do you have?
Speaking of bad signings, look what Dunn's doing.
Yeah.
He's got that average up above 260.
He's playing for another contract.
Three-run homer yesterday.
He's showing the rest of the league that he wants another contract.
He might get one. Probably get a year, but he's playing well. Like, I don't know what to say. Like,
the Yankees will give him a one-year, $20 million contract.
It's one of those things where, like, if he didn't have such horrid seasons before, and mind you, people forget he was actually an all-star for the White Sox.
He really had just one terrible.
He had two. His first and third last year was pretty bad too, when you look at it. His second year, even though the average was low, he had a lot of walks, and his slugging percentage was good. And everyone looks at the OPS as a big thing, and his OPS was pretty good in the year two. But it was a bad contract. What are you gonna do? But he's playing really well now. He's playing for, the White Sox should give thought of keeping him as a DH if he's affordable.
Yeah, it depends on what kind of money he wants.
Unless you want to put Dion Vicieto as DH, which may not be a bad idea either.
So
he can't field.
So Robin Ventura went to his daughter's college graduation, and was it one game he took off?
Yeah.
And came back and had the much publicized rant to his team. Yeah. About hustle. What do you think about that?
It's fine. I mean, family should come first.
I agree with that. But
the rant, I think it's good. So if you look at when Ozzie Guillen was the manager, he would always have tantrums, and he was known to shoot off the mouth at players and rub players the wrong way, like famous spouts between him and Nick Swisher, whereas you get Robin Ventura, who is the complete opposite. He's very timid and quiet, and
got his butt kicked in a fight
probably the reason why he's timid and quiet. But like, I think that when he says something, players take it more serious because it doesn't come out very often. So I think it was a good. I mean, you saw they won the next game after, and they won the next two. I think they lost today, but I think it's just showing that he is growing as a coach, as well as because he knew he needed to say it at that time. But I also think that he's also demanding respect from the players, which was one of the question marks, at least me as a fan, I've had, where like he's just kind of there. He's very quiet. He's knowledgeable, but he's not really like – doesn't seem like he would rub a player the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean, I think when, you know, sports nowadays, you really have to be careful with too many Ozzie Guillen-like rants because you're going to lose players. And I think at first when I heard about the Ventura rant, that I was like, oh man, you know, it might be a bad thing. But, you know, looking at the whole body of work and his personality and a lot of the things he says, I kind of looked at it as the father figure went in there and just said, I'm disappointed.
Yeah. And especially when, like, if you look at like what he went through last year with the team, and how the team didn't hustle last year, and how the team gave up in a lot of games last year, and, you know, horrible running on a base path led to league in errors or was up there. And, like, for him to finally say, okay, guys, you need to start playing the game the way it's supposed to be played. You're right. It is kind of like someone saying, I'm disappointed in you, and, like, it's time to get your act together.
And, I mean, I know personally I respond much better if somebody I respect tells me that I am disappointed.
Yeah.
Then so if somebody just screams and rants at me.
I make fun of my wife of like, I'm not like when my son gets older, I'm not going to like yell at him. It's funny. I actually told my wife, I am going to be like, son, I'm very disappointed in you. And then just like kind of shake my head and walk away and hoping that that's going to take more effect and be like, what are you doing? Why? So.
Yeah. But I mean, the White Sox, even through the injuries and the bullpen nightmares, they're 21-23. You really can't ask for much better than that.
It's not just that they're 21-23, is that there's signs of hope. And I think when they were hovering around 500 last year before they, you know, in May before they just, you know, the season was over, there was just no hope. Like, you didn't see anything in that lineup or the pitching staff where you're like, I'm going to get excited about this. And now, I mean, you have, you know, Beckham seems like he's hitting. Connor Gillespie came back, was hitting before he went into DL, comes back, and he's just killing the ball. You know, even Vizquel is doing well, and he's finally coming down to earth, but he's still contributing. And Ramirez has just had Ramirez and Flowers both have just had fabulous starts. And it's like
Flowers is struggling a bit now.
Yeah, but, I mean, you knew that was going to happen.
Oh, absolutely.
He's averaged still above 300, so.
Yeah, I mean, over the past week, it's he bet 130.
Yeah, but he's still generating a lot of walks, and that's what he was – that was the bill that was supposed to be part of the Flowers deal when we traded Javi Vasquez for him, was that this is a catcher that gets on base a lot. And so he's still getting a lot of walks, which is good. No, I mean – with Abreu, and I mean their hitting is fun to watch. Like today is a perfect example. You never think they're out of a game, and they were down 4-0 really quickly, but they slowly crept back and they almost came back.
That end, they're not feast or famine team. It's not like they
score 12 runs or nothing.
Yeah, or that they sweep a terrible team and then, you know, get swept by a good team. They're winning series against good teams. They're you know, competing in every game. So
it just sucks that Detroit is
pulling away. And you really call it that.
Well, when we talked about it, you were like, oh, it's close. I'm like, yeah, but they're like on a 6 or 7 game winning streak.
Yeah, I mean, even though the White Sox have a good record at 21-23, they're 8 games back.
Game and a half out of the wild card. Gotta look at that, you know. Actually, I just want them to be 500. I've told you that before.
Oh, yeah, like, I mean, that's just a few. I mean, 500 in baseball is a pretty good victory when you're terrible.
And their pitching is, like, it's funny because their pitching has been the strength the last few years. Their pitching, especially with Sale being injured, they really, you know, even though Danks has pitched all right, you know, you have Quintana who's steady, but that's really all they have right now. And they need to, now that their hitting looks like it's promising, they need to really shore up their pitching.
What's frustrating is a lot of people that don't take a closer look look at the Red Sox going from last to winning the World Series and see that as a reality everywhere in baseball.
They were
but the issue is yeah, they weren't a bad team that suddenly became great. They were yeah. a team that had a lot of bad breaks and, you know, and things happened, but were a fantastic team. And then, you know, came back
and,
the next year.
And the truth be told, I wouldn't be surprised if they were purposely tanking once they realized they weren't going to go anywhere.
I wouldn't be surprised either.
So
it's, you know, I think that to the outsider perspective sort of, you know, makes it seem like
it's doable.
That's a doable yeah. thing. But in reality, teams that are bad, it takes a while for them to get good. Even though the White yeah. Sox have taken a huge first step, they still have a lot of steps to go, you know, to get to a championship level.
We compare a lot our teams, and like you look at how big a step the White Sox have taken and where they are, and then you look at the Cubs, and they haven't even begun to take that step. You see little seeds, but it hasn't kicked in yet, and. I mean, it's amazing how baseball works like that, because, like, on paper, it's hard to say one team is better than the other, but yet, you know, it is.
In baseball, it's probably the biggest gap about any of the sports is that these immeasurable things. I mean, if you look at teams that just
the
catch
will
fire.
To win.
Yeah, they catch fire. This is the team chemistry, you know. It's
famous Hawk saying that's wrong.
It's, you know, the teams just have this chemistry that
yeah you well, to some extent, you think you're a good team and you think you're a winning team, and I bet if you look at the overall stats between like a really bad team and a winning team, and they're not that much different, but the winning team just wins games. And then,
yeah, it's, I mean, I think you've said it before, is like hitting is contagious, and you know, you have a team that motivates each other, and you have a good atmosphere in there, and
yeah.
and everyone's hustling and playing hard for not only themselves but their teammates
and the 10,000 fans.
Well,
sometimes
for our teams, it's there. We're looking at like, you know, 600-700 fans.
No, actually, the White Sox have been drawing much better as the weather got warmer. They're not great yet, but they're better than a couple hundred. So, I mean, I expect, especially with Abreu, I expect, and you can't beat ticket prices for the White Sox. It's almost laughable of what they're doing for their fans and the fact that people aren't going. And hopefully when the weather gets warmer, they will. Just like, if you can get a baseball ticket for $7, you can get a lower deck ticket for under $20. Like, that doesn't happen anymore in a major city. So.
No, and that's – and I guess, you know, we can use this to transition to the Cubs, is that's a team that when they underwent new ownership, you just hoped that this loser mentality and this – send like this cloud of losing over
you
the –
You weren't
the
losing
franchise.
Then. I keep arguing
no,
with
no,
that.
No, what I'm saying is – but. No, not that just wins and loss record, but this aura of losing. Only the Cubs could find a way to lose against the Marlins like they did. And not even the Bartman thing.
Yeah.
It's just that the Cubs found a way to, you know, they're like a team that's like a, they're like a freight train that can let a pebble derail
yeah.
them. But
I
mean,
don't
but look at
agree
it.
With that, but I get Cub fans feel that way.
But the thing is, you know, you hoped that the new ownership and new, you know, general manager and baseball operations guy, Theo, that this would all start to change. And there's a lot of little things that other fans that you probably think are just funny that kind of just embody that the Cubs mentality is. I mean, the stupid Wrigley Field cake that got thrown and that became a whole stupid thing. Or the did you hear about the mural?
Oh yeah, about 1920.
Yeah, it was a mural of Wrigley Field, but it was actually Comiskey Park.
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody said, "Hey, listen, that's not really Wrigley; that's Comiskey," and nobody did anything about it. And then suddenly, Deadspin caught a hold of it, and you know, the just like things like that.
Well, I think all this isn't an issue if you guys as fans didn't look at Theo Epstein when he came as the Wizard of Oz, you know? Like, the great and powerful wizard.
I didn't look at him like that. I looked at him as I was hoping as a guy that could steer this franchise and make them have this winning at even when they weren't winning.
He built up their farm system.
He did.
Kane County games are good.
I mean, so there's a lot of good things, but you just hope that these gaffes can just get fixed.
The main problem, and I've been saying this all along, this is year three, and you're looking at least year four and five.
Yeah, it's
slower than... And possibly longer.
Yeah.
And the argument that I had from day one when Theo came is everyone jumped on board and said, this is going to take 3 to 5 years. And I'm like, and then one thing I said, what if it takes longer? And a lot of people were like, no, it's not going to take longer. There's no way. And I'm like, you just don't know. If you decide that you're not going to fill a major league roster, that you're investing in the future, especially in baseball where half the best prospects never pan out to be, you know, baseball players. Like, who knows? What if 3 to 5 leads 6 to 10 and stuff? And I mean,
the scary part about it is I've been very optimistic about the young bats that are coming up. But I started.
You were in a path too.
I'm starting to worry.
Felix PA was.
No, I was never. I wanted them to trade him because at some point. Your
pitching for an independent team now.
I went and saw him play last season at the in Indianapolis in the minor league team, and I forgot who it was. Who was it that who was the third baseman for the Tigers a couple years ago? He was on the team too. I can't remember his name.
Oh, the guy, the good fielding guy who couldn't hit.
Yeah, he was on the same team.
Wow, he still plays.
Yeah, the minors. But anyway, for the record, I thought when they hit a certain point that I was like, you got to trade Felix PA while he has still trade value. And
you know, I mean, you even had like the last – like Brad Jackson and Vitters and – those were supposed to be can't-miss guys that were going to hit 20 or 30 homers in the bigs.
But, I mean, the way I'm looking at it is right now is you've got good starting pitching. I mean, that's fantastic.
For now. You're going to trade them all.
Well, no. But then the thing is even when these bats come up – is then you're going to have no pitching. So you have pitching now with no hitting. Then you're going to have hitting with no pitching. It's a little bit of a scary thought. And, you know, you hope that there's a plan in place and you hope that Samardzija can bring in another good crop of people like Gardner.
That's the problem is you're hoping that a trade for Samardzija is going to help instead of saying, why can't this team sign Samardzija? Because obviously he's proving me wrong. Which I said he wasn't an ace, and you know he's off to a great start, even though he hasn't won a game.
Yeah, and you know I've got a funny stat of that is the Cubs the other day scored 17 runs against the Cardinals, which was really nice to see because I hate the Cardinals, and they scored more runs in that game than they have for all of Samardzija's starts combined.
Yeah, I mean it sucks for him. Reminds me a lot of Quintana last year for the White Sox, It sucks that they're not thinking, why aren't the Cubs a team to sign him for the next 5 years? Like, why? What? And I think that's where you have to start looking at yourself as a fan and say, does this team really want to win in the next few years as opposed to at some point in the future? And it's like, if you have a guy like Samardzija who's doing what he's doing, he had over 200 strikeouts last year, and he looks like he's on pace for that this year. And, you know, I don't know. As much as I was saying before, it's kind of like the Carmelo thing where I'm kind of doing a 180. As much as I was saying before, like, trade him, is it like, why aren't you keeping this guy? Why are you trading him for prospects? If you think your plan is like a couple years of competing, why in the world would you not want a pitcher like that?
I mean, this is going to be a little preview of, I hoped this episode I was going to do, I've been doing a lot of like research and analysis and stuff about the Cubs finances, and I was hoping I would do it for this episode, but I didn't finish it, so it'll be next week. But this kind of touches on it a little bit, is that the Cubs financially are in a little bit of a pickle, and as much as they don't want to admit it, that there's a lot of handcuffing of Theo Epstein and what he wants to do. And I don't think that the picture that he was painted when he joined the organization is exactly where it is.
So do you think that they're in a pickle because of true finances or because of the Ricketts family not willing to dish out any of their own money?
That's it. They have this money that they put aside to do the team, and there's a lot of aspects that are causing them to not get the investment right away that they expected to get. And the thing is if you look, winning organizations, you have to put money into it to get it back. If you look at the Blackhawks, when old man Wirtz owned the team before he died, is they weren't willing to put any money in, and thus they had this frustrating team that never did anything. The old man dies, his Rocky comes in and puts his own money in and builds a winning organization that creates, you know,
You could say the same thing with Reinsdorf and the Bulls in the 90s. Like, mm-hmm. Reinsdorf spent a ton of money, of his own money. I mean, he was paying Jordan $25 million. Like, you telling me that all that money was coming from, like, the profits that the Bulls were having completely? I mean, it could have been. I don't know. But, I mean, yeah, every owner that I can think of that, you know, I guess Mark Cuban's also a great example, right? Mark Cuban makes sure like his players have the best of everything.
In that respect, he's kind of annoying in other respects.
Oh yeah, he's too much in public eye. But
yeah, I mean, he's very Jerry Jones-ish. But I mean, but he at least is willing to put his money into win. It's all about winning, and that's
going to be. We had the same problem with the. McCaskies and the Bears.
And, you know, I mean, at least with that, though, it's the NFL has a very tight salary cap, and they're always butting up to it every year. So that, I mean, it's different than when Papa Bear was alive and threw around nickels like they were manhole covers. but you know, going back to the Cubs, is there's a team that they, you know, they're still a couple years out from being able to do this new TV deal. And then you start having to look at the question is the TV, this giant TV deal money going to dry up by then? Because baseball is at a popularity wise is doing really well right now. But what if in the next 2 years or so we have, you know, either an economic crash or baseball takes a dive or
the next steroid thing comes out.
Something happens where these TV deals aren't as lucrative as they are right now, and the iron's not as hot, and the Cubs miss out on that, and that's something they're really counting on in order to financially move on in the future.
Well, it's a shame, because anyone knows that the Cubs are a potential gold mine, and if the Ricketts family would spend a little, they could make a lot more. I mean, when the Cubs win, they generate so much revenue, and in the last 15 years, we've seen that. So, I mean, it doesn't make any sense as to why they're not trying to push to get the Cubs better sooner rather than later.
And you know, it's not a knock on the White Sox, but I mean, you realistically, as a White Sox fan, know this, is that even after winning the World Series, is they aren't the biggest draw in town, and so even when they're doing well and they're doing things, they have a ceiling on what they can produce as far as revenue.
Well, I look at it a different perspective. I don't even look, like, I completely agree with that, but like, I look at it as, so you look at the teams that are constantly in the playoffs every year and how much revenue they make and how much money they spend, and what you see is teams that spend the money make the money and are always in the playoffs every single year.
But the Cubs are one of those special organizations that there's a handful of them, like the Red Sox and the Yankees, that as long as they put something on the field, they have this like unlimited potential of what they could make.
Yeah, you make so much more when you win, though.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I'm not saying that. But the Cubs are one of these teams that if they put a winning product on the field, it's It's almost endless how much revenue they can make. They don't have a ceiling, and that they're not doing with that. And
which is why I don't understand what the Ricketts are doing. It's like they should be focused on winning sooner rather than later.
You know, I'm going to really do an in-depth analysis on this next week, but it's, you know, between the ineptitude about, you know, at least using Rosemont as a bargaining chip against the city.
Or do it.
Or, I mean, in just every
aspect. Most Cubs fans are living in the suburbs anyways.
I mean, as much as it's really cool to have a stadium, like, right in the heart of the city, I think it would be hilarious to see all these people in Wrigleyville that are 25 years old that are bitching about a stadium that's been there four times as long as they've been alive and complaining about it if it up and left and watch every bar in that area close down and because...
Well, I mean, it's the way I look at it differently. Like, forget about that. Like, those people are all, you know, they're all bad people anyways. Like, all the rooftop owners or the bars owners in that area, they're feeding off of Major League Baseball. So, and I've always disliked people who did that.
And it's fine. It's fine to do that as long as you become part of that community. And, you know, if you're feeding off of the crowds going there and stuff. And
you should keep in mind you're the parasite and not the host.
Yeah. You know, it's the thing is you want to have a symbiotic relationship. If you are, you know, generating revenue because there's a baseball team there, but then you're participating in providing another service for them and not complaining about it or trying to leech, that's perfectly fine because that's what you should be doing as a business.
Unfortunately, they look at it as though they need to get theirs first.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I look at it like I keep telling you this. I keep telling people this, like, man, just imagine if the Cubs move to Rosemont. They'll have rooftops there and they'll reconstruct everything there, right? But you get a state-of-the-art stadium that would be worth you guys spending $60 a ticket for, you know? And, I mean, it would be easier to get to. It's still right by the Blue Line stop.
Oh, and I mean,
in Express, two different expressways are right there. It's like,
as people, like, if you're listening to this and aren't very familiar with Rosemont, I live in the city, but I'm very close to Rosemont. And Rosemont's got a lot of cool things. I mean, they have the convention center, so they have a ton of hotels. So people coming in from out of town that want to visit, or you want to go to a game and stay the night, you've got a ton of hotels. There's restaurants there. They have
shopping.
They have like brand new, really nice mall right there. They've got a casino right there, and they've got train lines, and they've got the Blue Line goes there. And there,
it's right next to O'Hare.
Yeah, it's right by O'Hare, and you have, you know, teams will actually like coming in there because they can stay. They don't have to fight the traffic. Their teams come in. They stay at really nice hotels.
You're at your hotel. Yeah. Go to ballpark. Yeah.
And they have all these shuttles that run around because they want you to go to their businesses. The mall has a shuttle. The casino has a shuttle. And the Blue Line is right there. It's so convenient.
Yeah. So besides the logistics of the area, you have, you know, if they were to rebuild Wrigley, you would have quite arguably the greatest stadium ever made. I'm saying this as a Sox fan. And
yeah. Like, and the mayor of Rosemont is just begging them. I mean, the tax breaks that they're offering, the land that they're giving them, it was
25 acres.
Yeah. It's basically, and they promised to do whatever they needed to do to build this community around there with more bars and restaurants, and it just seemed. And the thing is, it's not like when the Bears threatened to move to Indiana, where, you know, that
you knew it wasn't going
to
happen.
You knew it wasn't going to happen. This Rosemont is so close to the city, and public transportation still goes there. It's not like it's out of the way. It's not like it's that big.
Secondly, in between the city, because like on the opposite side of Rosemont is O'Hare, which is Chicago.
Yeah.
And then the other side is Chicago again.
And then the thing is this is huge. you could put a parking lot. People could drive to the game. You could tailgate, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, a lot of Cub fans, when I say my belief, they're just like, no, what are you talking about? Why would you ever do that? It's the whole nostalgia thing. It's like...
I'm probably, out of any of your friends, one of the biggest believers in nostalgia. But you know what I believe in more than nostalgia? Winning. And part of winning is having a state-of-the-art facility.
Yeah.
It's true. That's why the Blackhawks are about to start building a $30 million practice facility.
They did already. I've seen it.
I'm thinking of the
Bulls facility.
No, the Blackhawks are. They just announced this week, Crane's Business Report, and Rocky Wirtz confirmed it.
Nice.
That they're, once they get the assurance about, you know, amusement tax.
Is it going to be right near the United Center?
It's going to be in the near west side.
Yeah, because they're building the new Bulls workout place now, like across the street from the United Center.
Yeah, so this is going to be in a similar area. So they're going to build a $30 million stadium, which is going to be apparently it's going to have community use as well.
Yeah, they just need to make that neighborhood a little better.
It'll get there. I mean, it's much better than it was when we were kids.
It's still not that good.
I work in that neighborhood, so I mean, I know for well. But it's, you know, it's still infinitely better than it was, which is not saying it's still got a long way to go. But
yeah.
But the thing is, you know, that's what you do is you have state of the art facilities, you have ownership that's willing to put in the money, and you have competent management that puts stars in place and then has a feeder system.
I mean, you think about it. The Cubs don't need it. It's not that the Cubs need to win the series. They just need to have a really good team every year.
Yeah, so you have a team that's not just competitive, but is at least potentially could win every year.
Like in 07 and 08, I always go back to those 2 years because they were there. They were better than the Cardinals. They were in the playoffs both those years.
Yeah, and just imagine if you had a state-of-the-art facility and a farm system that was good, that's where it starts. And you know, I keep talking about the Blackhawks, but the Blackhawks were an abysmal franchise. They were,
and look how quickly it turned it around.
ESPN ranked out of all the four major sports, dead last. So suddenly, you know, a couple of short years later, and they've got to be one of the tops. They've got an amazing farm system. They've won, you know, two Stanley Cups in the recent years, and they very well could win again this year.
And the fans come out. That's the other thing. It's like, I mean, it's almost ridiculous how much hockey ticket prices cost, but they sell out all the time. And
just look at how many Blackhawks jerseys you see going down the street. People
are getting mad at me for being a basketball fan more than a hockey fan. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm staying true to I watch a hockey game. I would cheer for the.
Oh, I would totally call Blackhawks. I would totally call you out if you became a Blackhawks fan over a Bulls fan.
It's just like the people who say they're, like, we talked about this before. The people who say that they're like as dedicated a fan of both are liars. It's just really hard to be. Like, you don't have much time to invest
because they're competing. They're competing sports and you know, as somebody that works in that neighborhood. Like, they both, as much as I love the Blackhawks, they both drive me nuts because when there's home games, my commute doubles coming home. But it's it's impossible to be a diehard for both teams. Like, I mean, I like the Bulls and I follow them, but I can't be.
You'll still go to their parade. I still go to Blackhawks parade.
But I can't be in the minutia, in the thick of things with the Bulls and the Blackhawks because it's just, you know. I have a job and a wife and a baby on the way and
they both play at the same time.
They both play at the same time.
It's like how do you choose when both are in the playoffs? It's like, what do you do? I get it. And I mean, I'll be watching a lot more of the Blackhawks now I watched the Wild series, and now that the Bulls are out. But you know, I'm never gonna be like, oh, I'm a amazing Blackhawk fan. I maybe go to one game a year, you know.
Yeah, and you know, so it's you have to you know, choose. And yeah, you're right. Anybody that says, like, oh, I'm diehard of both, you're kind of full of crap. You know, you just can't really do it. It's unless you have nothing else to do in your life.
And you DVR one game.
Yeah, and then watch the other. And, you know, it's most everybody I know is a job and or a family. So
the family thing makes it even harder.
Oh, I know. Like, my wife's only like, you know, halfway through her pregnancy, and I'm already like, I have no time now. I don't even know what's going to happen when this baby's born.
You'll have more time. You'd be surprised. When you're stuck home in the evening, the baby falls asleep, like, now, you know, like, what do you do? Watch TV.
It's funny, you know, getting off the sports thing is my wife was saying, you know, she's like, I am going to miss going out. And I'm like, I'm not. I kind of like the thought of me sitting home.
Well, my advice to you is you should go out as much as you can now, because it's going to get a lot harder.
Oh, and no, that's the thing we're doing now. We're trying to have some
referring to her, I'm referring to you. Seriously, like, I mean, it's that you're still going to be able to go out, but like one of you is going to be able to go out. And for some reason with me, at least, maybe it's because my wife works at night times more often. I'm definitely at home more on nights or on weekends. So yeah. And do it as much as you can. Coming here and having talking sports on a Saturday night.
Yeah, oh, and just you know, to clarify, this is the baby is in bed sleeping right now.
We hear him cough.
Hear him coughing in there. But we started podcasting after he went to bed. So this is the scenario for those of you listening. There's two mid-30s guys on a Saturday night podcasting. And
someone's having a party outside.
You could probably hear there's Mexican music blaring, and you're probably hearing the little bit. And then the baby in there sleeping and coughing. And we read 87 books to the kid before he went to bed.
Life.
That's the life. We used to be party guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's not all, you know, I know we're changing the subject, but it's not, you still go out, you know, once in a while. It's just farther in between. Like, my wife and I saw the movie Neighbors a couple of days ago, and like, it's supposed to be a comedy and stuff, but we're like kind of looking at like Seth Rogen and his wife and their child, and we're like, oh, this hits close to home.
Yeah, it's funny, as I mentioned a little bit earlier today, I'm on the wait list for the Bears season tickets, and by the time I get them, you know, my wife is pregnant with our daughter, and I'm like, oh man, what if she doesn't like football? And I was like, Sundays would be one of the times that, you know, daddy daughter time. And I'm like, what if she doesn't like football? And then she's really not gonna like it in the cold weather. I'm like,
Saturday would be daddy daughter time. Sundays would be daddy time.
Yeah. Well, at least I could have, you know, watch it at home. But like, she will not want to go to a game if she does not like football and sit in the cold weather.
Yeah, it's gonna be great for you. I've taken my son to, I haven't taken my son to a Cubs game, but like 8 or so Sox games. And next year when he's 3, I'm gonna take him to his first Bulls game, and like that stuff is like so much to look forward to as far as parenting is like, the only reason why I have season tickets now still is so I could take him to the games, because that will be awesome. That, you know, you go to games, and how many times you go and you see fathers and sons hang out or fathers and daughters hang out. It's like, you know, that excites me that I can do that. So
yeah, and when the Cubs build their stadium in Rosemont, you listening, Ricketts family, you know, we can hop, skip, and jump right there on the blue line.
Yeah, I'd go.
And and we could do all the interactive things.
I might even be okay with my son being a Cubs fan if you guys move to Rosemont.
you know, it's for his birthday. He's gonna get Cubs gear.
It doesn't matter. Like, as long as he likes baseball, I'm fine with it. Not to make it sound like that. I'll find it hard to believe he becomes a Cubs fan just because the intent will be that there'll be a lot of father-son bonding experience over the White Sox.
Unless he just wants to rebel.
Yeah, I don't think I'll have a reason to rebel against me.
Yeah.
But
I mean, as I've said before, it's I didn't like the White Sox at all, but starting doing this podcast and, you know, really, like, I've become very appreciative of the White Sox, and I will be probably going with you to a White Sox game sometime this summer.
Well, if you want to go with me and the boy next Sunday.
And not a crosstown rival game.
Yeah, I don't go White to those Sox, games anymore.
Oh, yeah, I gave up. I went to one, and it was...
Well, you went to one with me, and the fight broke out, remember?
Yeah. Too much. I'm too old for that.
But, I always tell people, like, I don't hate the Cubs. It's the fans that annoy me a lot.
And I mean, just fans in general.
Fans in general suck.
Yeah.
Look this way. I don't think Cub fans are as bad as Red Sox or Yankee fans. Or any East Coast fan.
Or Philadelphia fans.
Or Orioles fans.
But, you know, it's when you're like 21, 22, is you don't mind it as much. But... you know, you've got a 2.5-year-old and I've got one on the way, and you
don't
just
get no fighters. Yeah, watch
a game. Yeah, like not only do I not want to get in a fight, I don't want people around me getting into a fight, and you know, like, because like if I bring my daughter to a game and somebody tries to start a fight with somebody and throws beer and hits my daughter, I'm gonna be very upset.
Yeah,
you know, so it's one of those things is you're just like,
I guess for me, the main thing is I don't want to sit in seats that I pay for and have someone behind me say my team sucks when I already know they do. I don't have to have someone come into my stadium and tell me that my team sucks.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I'm a diehard Bears fan and I don't like the Packers, at least I can, the Packers fans, when they taunt you, it's like, your team is not as good as ours. You're like, okay, that's fair. You know, whereas Lions fans are, you know.
Or Minnesota fans have a chip on their shoulder. It's kind of annoying.
Yeah, you would think that being from Minnesota, they'd be much more polite, but they're not.
They're like, I mean, the Twins are just, well, they're getting better now too, but like the amount of abuse I get from Twinkie fans are just, it's like, really? Come on, guys. Like,
yeah, but I mean, nothing.
How many times have you made the playoffs and lost?
Nothing will beat Detroit fans. They're like the Philly fans of the Midwest.
They'll move here too, by the way.
I'm going to say this too, is going with this, is I parked outside Gary's house and the car in front of me had Illinois license plates with I Heart Michigan stickers all over it.
Half my work is from Michigan. And like every drummer I've ever been with in a band is from Michigan. And it's like, listen, you can like your teams and all, but if you move to another city, you have to respect their teams. And I've never been around so many people who disrespect local teams, but then decide, oh, I live in Chicago and enjoy it as a city, but yet just talk down about every one of their sports teams. So many of the, like, I have to deal with so many people saying the White Sox suck and Detroit. I know the White Sox suck and I know Detroit's awesome. I don't have to constantly hear you come to my city and tell me that.
I mean, I lived in Philadelphia for 9 years, and you know how I stayed a Chicago fan? I sat in my house and I got the sports packages, and when my teams came to town, I quietly went to the games, watched, then went home, and I didn't berate anybody. It just, you know.
Yeah, you.
I did it on my own.
Every time I've seen my teams play in another city, except when the only time that it was a little weird was when I saw the Bears play in Miami, because there are actually more Bears there, so that was a little eerie. Like,
well, I remember when your brother lived in down the street from me in Philadelphia for a while, and you came out and we went to a White Sox Phillies game.
Oh yeah.
And you and your brother squeezed in. You know, Gary's brother is like twice Gary's size, and he was squeezed into one of Gary's White Sox jerseys.
Oh yeah, it was, he couldn't quite button it. Yeah, he was wearing a Maglio jersey. In fact,
yeah,
was that the game where like you almost caught the foul ball?
Yeah.
That by the way was one of my favorite baseball stories, where like I'm talking to Sean and he's kind of looking away from the field, and all of a sudden,
hey, oh wait, I'm gonna interrupt this for just 1 second. Is my dream since I was a little kid was to catch either a home run or a foul ball. All right, go ahead with your story.
So I'm talking to him, and so we're not really paying attention, and like a foul ball is hit and it hits off like the concrete below the upper deck, and it comes back towards us, and I'm talking to Sean, and all of a sudden I see Sean's face just light up, Like, all his hopes and dreams were about to, like, everything was coming in some moment, and he lifts his hands up, and this ball, I turn around, I see this ball pass me by and go right through his...
It didn't go through, it went over my fingertips because I have about a 3 millimeter vertical. It went tipped off the tip of my fingers.
And the person, literally like a row below him, yeah, gets it.
It was the row after us got it.
And then he just sat down and pouted the rest of the game.
I couldn't tell you who hit that ball. I don't remember. I just know that it would have been awesome if I caught it.
I don't even know. I've caught a few foul balls. I don't even know where they are. Should go to more Sox games. Anyways, we've digressed.
Yeah. Well, I guess we should wrap this up because it's past my bedtime.
Yeah.
To thanks, Gary, for hosting tonight's episode and for being on and yip-yapping with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you to Gary for joining in on another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago, and that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Next week, we're hoping to have another action-packed episode. We're going to break down the business aspect of the Chicago Cubs and how it's affecting the baseball side of Theo Epstein's rebuild. We're going to talk... hopefully, Blackhawks being up 2-0 because we should be broadcasting right around game 3. Cubs, Sox, we'll have more information on Chicago Bears rookie minicamp and how people looked and how the different players looked. And we're hoping that we're going to have, it'll be me and hopefully some fun-filled guests. So thanks for checking us out. And you can check us out at talkingsportschicago.blogspot.com. And you can check us out on Twitter at Swirsky Sports. Thanks for checking us out. This is Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, signing off.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Try not to.
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go berry.